My name's Corinne McKisson, and I'm 54 years old. I've lived in Seattle, Shoreline area, my whole life. The house that we live in now, I've been at for 21 years. Their dad, my ex-husband, and I bought that house at a point in our marriage where we thought we probably were not going to get to be parents, because we'd already, you know, had some of that typical journey that dead ends, and we didn't think that we could afford to adopt. So we really didn't pursue it any further for a while, or a couple of years. We'd been married 19 years when we finally made our travel to get Campbell. Yeah, so, you know, I was 40 when she was born, and almost 41 when we brought her home in 2003. My husband left in September of 2011. We've been married 23 years, and he had been just making some different life choices that weren't conducive with our family, and so he decided to head out on his own. And I think it's been a very different experience than what he imagined. He imagined he would kind of have a separate but connected life, and that nothing else in regards to parenting would change for him. But within the first year that he had moved out, he wasn't seeing the kids regularly anymore. He had a court order against him where he was required to have only supervised visitation, which he's really struggled with being able to coordinate. So they see him 1, 2, 3 times a year, usually at his sister's house. Aunt Mickey is wonderful at kind of creating opportunities for people to get together. So we usually spend Christmas and some other major holidays at either his sister or his brother's house. So fortunate that family loves me and my kids on both sides of our family. Such incredible support through a lot of unexpected difficulties over the last several years. But there's never been any question that I'm family, that they're family, that those kids, you know, belong to their aunts and uncles. And dad shows up, dad doesn't show up. It's kind of become a very secondary to the family connection at this point. I think that's one of the things that makes me the most conflicted about being an adoptive parent, the commitment that we made when we made the agreement to adopt, and they're having a very different experience than what we had originally intended.
I appreciate you sharing this very openly, because I've interviewed a number of families, and that I know other families, where divorce has been part of the equation after the children come home. There have been a couple of families where death of one parent has happened, where family was ill, one of the families in our travel group. So I think this idea that there's a kind of fairy tale story narrative, you know, our families are like all families, and we struggle with the same issues that other families struggle with. How do the girls adjust to what's happened, to the split and to your ex-husband's, sounds like, intermittent involvement in their lives now?
They have adapted very well. Initially, there was lots of turmoil and kind of unexpected hostility, and they were quite young at 6 and 9. And so I had arranged for each of them to have a counselor. I had a counselor. We all had someone that we could go to and work through kind of what was happening on our own without having to worry about, you know, taking care of somebody else. I think there's a lot of the girls being concerned for me, being concerned that mom's okay, and ultimately, you know, we just, the three of us, really have bonded. And yeah, it's very sad that Dad has become kind of an afterthought. But the three of us, we have a nickname, we're the Three C's. We also have a little game that we play sometimes on the holidays called McKissin's in the Kitchen, and we do a play acting of a cooking show with the three of us in the kitchen. It's quite comical. We have a few videos of it. You know, I think they realize how much, you know, this village concept of taking care of each other has been very real for us. My sisters and my brother, their grandparents, aunts and uncles, even older cousins. And then, you know, Melody, who Campbell does dance with, that teacher, she's been incredible. You know, people, you just don't expect people that you think initially of on the periphery, they've really been part of our inner circle because they've seen our circumstances change and they want to, they've stepped in to help carry us, friends through the soccer team, folks that, you know, making sure rides happen, don't worry about the payment whenever it works out, or, you know, hey, you want anything from the vegetable garden, come pick with me.
So, and it also sounds like your ex-husband's family has been helpful, or at least his sister, is that right?
His brother and sister, and my brother-in-law, sister-in-law, very much so, yeah. They love us, they make a point of letting us know that, they're very involved with the kids. There's never been any thought of excluding me at holidays. I'm part of the family. The fact that we were married for so long before the split got to, you know, we grew up together in our early adulthood, being together over 20 years.
So you went into this with the expectation that you would be a kind of traditional married parents, and you have had the experience or having the experience of being a single mom. And in your own mind, just sort of in terms of your own sense of identity, how much, what has that adjustment been like?
I'm definitely a single mom, and I've gotten to a point where I'm very comfortable with that. During the transition, again, with the age that the girls were at, we were still pretty involved with things like the local FCC activities, been to the camp, culture camp one time, and even just all of our friends and our network of the connections. I didn't have any other family that looked like ours. They were all, you know, a number of adoptive moms that were single and mostly married couples. And gotta say, did not enjoy going to intimate gatherings of like 5-6 families where I'm the only single adult, and kids are having a great time, but I'm at the table with all of these couples, and I think that's probably pretty typical for folks that end up being divorced or widowed. But it's been 5 years, and I've adapted, and part of the adapting is I don't always go to those events because they're just either uncomfortable or sometimes they don't feel relevant in the same way. Because all the adults are together talking about things that I don't think other folks see as being related to being coupled. But either it's that or it's that, just that missing piece, the fact that I'm not coupled anymore. So it brings something up to the surface, just this awkwardness that never goes away. Mm-hmm. So we've, you know, just who's to say what natural fluctuations would have happened in connections with different families anyways. Kids at the age that they are now and having serious interest in activities, both the girls in drill team, Campbell with her dance performances, Colleen with her soccer, families that we were really close with when they were younger, our other Chinese adoptive families, you know, someone's in ballet all the time and can never make a play date because she's always committed or someone's always in gymnastics. And so there's got to be some natural transition there that's just part of what I think any family goes through as their kids age.
Well, regardless of whether parents remain married or not, or started out as single parents or become single parents, it's true that as the kids age, it's just not all, you know, dragon dancing and face painting anymore, right? And so they're also where we have the opportunity to kind of set the agenda when they're younger. They are going to show either, you know, they're going to decide what they're interested in as they get older. So, and I'm assuming it sounds like from my discussion with the girls that that's happened, that there's, do you feel like they have, I know they both do dance and drill team. What is their kind of evolution in terms of their interest in doing Chinese related things? Is that still there? Is it lessening?
I don't know if that's ever been a natural interest for either of them, something that we made a commitment to, that our family was becoming Chinese and that we were making sure to integrate opportunities to be part of our local Chinese community as part of our family. When they were young, it was more of the adoptive community, but as they've gotten a little bit older, we've made an effort to have connections in Chinatown, which is a very rich community in Seattle, and thrilled that our middle school and high school offer Mandarin as one of the world languages they can take. There have been a number of things, including Mandarin and drill team, that the girls initially very strongly did not want to participate in. And I didn't give them a choice. And I think, you know, they get a lot of choice. And we encourage them to pursue the activities or the sports they want to do. Campbell wanted to do cross country. And so you find a way to, you know, get the rides and, you know, get people where they need to be. Same with the select soccer. We continue to battle a little bit about Mandarin at school because it's not been an enjoyable experience for her. She does okay at it. Her teacher, when she talks to me, is very encouraging. She doesn't say, please don't make that kid come anymore. She's killing me. She's holding everyone back. That's not what I'm hearing, and that's not what I see in the grades. But I see her working on it every night, and they do the writing too. She can write fluidly. It's crazy to me that you can do it that fast over 1 to 2 years' time. Drill team, I had to physically push Campbell onto the parking lot where they were practicing to get her to do it. She was holding back. We went to watch, and I had to physically make that motion. And then I think she went ahead and walked forward when she realized I was going to continue. She wanted to minimize the embarrassment. But the aunties at drill team asked the other girls, how many of you wanted to come to drill team when you first joined? Like 2 of 30 girls raised their hands. How many of you like coming to drill team now? They all raised their hands and screamed and yelled. And Colleen had a little bit different, you know, resistance, but she resisted as well. And we had some tears shed. And yet after the first or second time for both of them, they were like, Mom, no, we need to be on time. Auntie says it starts at 10 o'clock. We'll get in trouble if we're late. I need to, you know, they really take on ownership of it. And it's exactly what I hoped it would be, you know, a sisterhood, potentially a lifelong kind of sorority of sisters and friends. And certainly what we see with the older girls and the women that are still involved with it. And it's right in the heart of Chinatown. So it takes us there every week. And we start to get known by shop owners. And we have certain restaurants we go to. And so it really feels knit into the fabric of our family life.
It's interesting to me. You've made a kind of decision that you're not always going to say, okay, you're not interested anymore, I understand. We're going to go with the flow here. There's a certain core decision about Chinese culture that you are willing to impose on the girls at 11 and 14. What are your hopes for what that will mean as they get older? Because there's going to be a day when you can't push them onto the field, right?
Absolutely not. My hope is that it adds some perspective to them as they get to an age, maybe in their late teens or into their 20s, where they're more self-aware and thinking about their full life experience and where they've come from. And if they decide not to continue speaking it, you know, to me, that's fine. To me, I would be, it would just not be acceptable to have access to that, like the opportunity to learn the language. And to just say, no, if you don't want to, no, you'll do it. And then I've heard from plenty of people when they're older, I wish I had. I wish I had. I've heard many people say, I wish my parents had made me. I wish I'd listened to them. We all have moments like that, right? And whether it's about a friend or about a certain class or something that, you know, visiting your grandparents before they were dead, you know, all those types of, you know, yes, I make them come to visit grandparents. They may not want to, but their grandparents are in their late 80s and early 90s. They're not going to be around a lot longer. And I know how meaningful it is to have that memory as an adult of those childhood experiences with your grandparents. So I kind of see these in a similar vein.
It's sort of like a parental role, mm-hmm. in your view.
This is my job. Yeah.
I'm going to kind of put the thing in front of you that you may not want to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What you do with it down the line, that's part of your story. Yeah.
So tell me about their sort of curiosity about returning to China. It sounds like they're both pretty contented now not to do that. Do you have any desire at some point to take them back? I know Campbell's been back twice, so then there are only so many trips to China and most of us can manage to afford.
Yes. Yeah, there's a little bit of a family story to that. The original plan had been at age 8, because of the lucky nature of that number, and because we had agreed that that was an age when kids are older, that they will actually retain some solid memories from what they did at that age. Much younger than that, you know, we just have little fleeting snapshots from those days. So we were going to go every 3 years, and Campbell went at age 8, and a year and a half later, her dad left, and our household income went to about 50% of what it had been, and it just hasn't been an option since then. Colleen totally understands. They're both beautiful girls. They have so much understanding and acceptance about our changed circumstances. But, you know, she'll joke once in a while. She's like, yeah, you got to go twice, and I haven't gotten to go at all. I said, you know, we'll go. We'll figure it out. You know, it'll be the tax refund 1 year instead of, you know, replacing the appliance that needs to be replaced or something. We'll stay in hostels instead of the, you know, maybe we won't get a paid interpreter. But Campbell will know enough Mandarin at that point that maybe she could be our interpreter. You know, she's shaking her head no. Or maybe it would just be the trip of Colleen and I alone, because Campbell got that opportunity, and that was really special. That was really special.
So I hear you. You're thinking about the future and how it can work out.
Yeah. And it work out. It was not affordable for us to do it when we were a family of two incomes. It was very hard to make it happen. And I just said, you know, we're going to do it. And we just figured it out. I've had many opportunities to do that over the last 5 years. How am I going to pay that mortgage? How am I going to, you know, you just figure it out. It seems to come together.
Yeah. I think it's all about kind of an acknowledgement that life is a series of troubleshooting exercises in one form or another. And the faster you kind of get with that, the more manageable life is, right?
Yeah.
So is there something about your experience that I haven't asked you about that you would particularly like to share or feel like would help other people to know?
You know, at the outset, I think people are figuring this out more and more with adoption, but just realizing that if you're drawn to adopt and you think you can't afford it, you can figure it out. There's all sorts of resources available. There's creative ways of pulling the money or the equity out of things that you or family members have. And it's just, I couldn't imagine regretting it even farther from that. I mean, I can't imagine. This was the life I've been waiting for. You know, I looked for my kids in all the wrong places, as the song said, you know? And there they were waiting for me in China. And I just, I can't imagine not having moved forward with it. I know the way things have changed with adoption now, and it's not as readily accessible in China as it was, you know, finished in 2005, and I think things changed the next year. We're really fortunate. And even though we have had that experience of going back to the orphanage and seeing the home culture and the language, and for all of those FCC events, we're still just kind of a pretty typical American family. You know, my girls are sitting here in two chairs in the room, both looking at their telephones. And, yeah, I just wouldn't trade it for anything. Being their mom is the best thing in the world.